listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Very pleasant. Good afternoon. Thanks for giving us a little bit of time today. We're here for the next 4 hours, and we have a lot to do. Busy middle of the week. So let's get started here with some headlines. And yes, they're still out there, and they're still trying to figure out how to put themselves back together again. They have to want to win. How to save the Pac-12 for the sake of college football. I frankly have not missed the Pac-12. I know it's always cliche to say, hey, it's always great when USC, and I really don't think it matters. I've enjoyed watching college football over these last couple of years when only twice Washington and Oregon have made it to the CFP. We'll talk about that later on in the program. And Stuart Mandel, who lives out there and who's an acolyte of the Pac-12, even though he went to school elsewhere, is going to tell us why it needs to be saved. I may go out and get a sandwich during that segment. Not that I have anything against Stuart. I'm just not sure I really think it's that important to save the Pac-12. But hold your horses. Let's be fair. Let's listen. Meanwhile, have you heard about this? LSU is looking for a new president. Remember, King Alexander left. They have an interim guy. He decided he doesn't want the job. And just when you thought it was safe to look at a presidential search list again, am I reading that correctly? Mark Emmert, he of the NCAA president, he's close friends with Scott Woodward. Yeah, we know about the family ties. Remember, he hired Woodward. He took Woodward with him to Washington. And many believe that his time is near, that a lot of folks want him out in Indianapolis. So do you land? Is the LSU chancellor's job a rebound deal? When you get dumped by someone else, do you go to LSU, considering all the issues they have there? That is the question, and we will try to get it resolved this afternoon. But the Baton Rouge Business Report reporting that. Meanwhile, Lane Kiffin getting ready for the Grove Bowl. That is Saturday. What does Lane have up his sleeve? He's got a great quarterback. That's what we do know that. Matt Corral had a sensational season last year. And is it possible that he will be the top quarterback in the SEC? His statistics, especially that QBR, would give you reason to believe. Meanwhile, how long has it been since we heard the whining sounds of Dabo Swinney? It's been a long time, and I can't tell you how nice it's been not to hear Dabo whine about this or that. But he was on J. Will, Zubin, and Key today and was asked about the NFL. Is that correct?
You know, as I've said many times, people, when I get asked the question, I just say never say never, because who knows, you know, what's going to come down the road. And I think you always have to process those things in real time. But I just try to, you know, be great where my feet are day in and day out.
If you were in charge and decided, okay, we're going to outlaw certain phrases from the English language, would that be one of them that we just heard? Never say never. You never say never. I mean, is that an original thought? And I don't want to come down on it is what it is, because I'm more interested not in the phrase it is what it is. I'm curious. Does anyone know who the first person in history who ever proclaimed it is what it is? No, it wasn't General Custer at Little Bighorn, although it could have been. Anyway, that's where we are. Let's tell you what we're going to do today. And this will not be an English lecture, I can assure you. Stuart Mandel will get his take on the Pac-12. Is it worth saving? Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU. A lot of people are high on him in the draft. Ramon Foster has been through the draft. He's the host of a successful show in Nashville, Tennessee. Daniel Libet from Sportico. Fascinating story about LSU and what has been going on down there. And if you haven't had enough draft conversation, then you better get ready for Mike Renner. Nobody better. He is the lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus. Phone lines are open at 855-242-7285. Let's get to the calls. And start with Rob in New York City. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how are you? Hang on a second. I got to mute this. Paul, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Rob. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hey, when are you back in New York City, by any chance?
That's a good question. It is. It's been a year since.
When is the last time you were in New York City?
About the week before the pandemic.
Okay.
And by the way, it was
obvious reasons.
Bob, it was scary then. I mean, you knew the pandemic had arrived, and you could feel it everywhere. And already things were starting to. When I got there, we went out to dinner one of the nights I was there, and even at that point in early March of 2020, things were starting. Yeah, the restaurant was half full.
Right, but I mean, I live here, and I've lived here since '85, so I saw the late '80s and the crazy subway cars, and I saw commercial buildings collapse the early '90s.
Right.
Then the internet bubble, then 2001, 9/11, then Sandy, the financial crisis, and now COVID.
New York's coming back. Don't worry. Anyone who says it's not has never spent any time there.
Oh, no. In fact, here's been my observation. Every time that those things have happened, New York City, it seems to always be on the front end of it and also seems to be the one that recovers the biggest when it actually recovers.
That's a good point. And, I mean, you're there, but from what I see of New York and what I hear about New York, I think all the financial experts say that when we get back to semi-normal, and we're not there yet, spending is going to be through the roof, and New York will benefit from that. Because, I mean, who doesn't want to go to New York?
Well, here's an interesting data point. I think there are over 70 million tourists come to Manhattan annually. So what is that, 6 million something a month? They're gone. Over 400,000 have moved out. The rich have just gone to their, place in the Hamptons.
Sure.
And taking their children there. And then what, 7 out of 10 are no longer, or at this point, are not coming into their office. So it's a very interesting dynamic. I've never really seen anything like it.
Well, I think I'm just giving an opinion here. I'm not educated on the subject other than observationally, but I think we're moving.
Yeah, but you're here. I mean, you're here as one of those workers who are at this moment.
Yeah, no. My work in New York was seasonal. It was about 5 months out of the year, but I was there 3 days a week, and so I was a part-time worker, and it's an amazing place. I mean, and my family's from there, so it's not like I needed to be introduced, but New York is, once you get accustomed to it, you're as miserable as everyone else.
You almost know like what you're talking about.
I do.
Well, anyway, so, I mean, the reason for my call today, I'm such a Georgia guy, and I toe that line. I just watched the Georgia G game, spring game, on the SEC network before you came on.
Right.
Team looks good, solid. I mean, JT Daniels, and I mean, it all looks good. But I'm more interested in, you being a producer of a show. I mean, how long have you been doing this? I mean, let's include the radio show.
Including radio, a little, about 30 years.
About 30 years, right? I mean, I work in the entertainment industry, so I know what it's like to start from the bottom, get coffee,
sure,
get paid nothing, blah, blah, blah. But all right, so, but I found your approach today to be very provocative, and it connected to me, and so it must be tremendously hard to do that on a daily basis, and I have to tip my hat to you because you do such a great job.
Well, Rob,
doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there are days when I don't. Yeah, but I mean, our next guest, Stuart Mandel, the headline in his story, and he's quoting somebody here. They have to save the Pac-12 for the sake of football, and I found that to be pretty comical. And we both have, our interests are similar in terms of our allegiance. Hey, I'd love to continue this conversation. I want to find out more about your business next time we talk. But Stuart is on is waiting, and we are going to bring him on here in a couple of moments. Right now, we will take a break. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back to our program. It's great to have all of you here, and we mentioned this at the beginning of the show. About the headline in the Athletic story, the deep dive by Stuart Mandel. And when I'm talking about deep dive, I mean a very deep, exhaustive look at what has happened to the Pac-12. Stuart Mandel joins us right now. Stuart, great to have you on. And I know a lot of people, if they only read headlines about why college football needs the Pac-12, I'm sure a number of jokes were being made. And that comes with the territory. But as we say hello to you, I think it's obvious why you did this piece. It's fantastic. But tell us what you learned in trying to trace back what has gone wrong, other than everything, in football with the Pac-12.
Well, thank you, Paul. I think there's been a lot of angst in around Pac-12 football the last several years, and it was all directed pretty much at Larry Scott, the commissioner, very polarizing guy. He is now on his way out. And as I talk to a lot of people in and outside the Pac-12, you realize that, yeah, there are some things he did that he definitely deserves the L for, and in particular, the failure that is the Pac-12 network. And there's a lot of things that were totally out of his control. And if the Pac-12 wants to become a national power in football, it's got to start with the 12 people who were his bosses, the presidents and chancellors of the Pac-12 schools, who I think have taken a little bit too much of a were the noble ones. We're not going to contribute to the overspending and the win-at-all-costs mentality of college football. And frankly, don't do themselves any favors with that, because A, that's what your fans want, is to be good at football. And B, football is the engine that drives the bus. It's the sport that pays for all the other sports. And they consider themselves the conference of champions that wins national championships in all their Olympic sports. And the best thing that could happen to those Olympic sports would be for them to gain a lot more prominence and be playing for national championships and then make more money. And the more that money gets, you know, dispersed to the other sports, those sports benefit in recruiting. So it's really kind of a backward mentality at the top of the Pac-12.
You lay it out in really simple terms. It's almost like the Cliff Notes version of how to become relevant again. But one of your premises, you start with something that it sounds foreign to those of us in the South, you know, loving football, embracing it, acknowledging that it really matters. How do you make a culture love something when clearly they, you know, as you just alluded, they act like they're too good for it?
Well, I don't think it's fair to say that Pac-12 fans as a whole don't love football. There are plenty of rabid Oregon, USC, Washington, you name it, fans. Are they as obsessed as fans in the SEC? Absolutely not. Are there as many of them? Absolutely not. But if you go through the history of that conference, I mean, somebody said to me, I didn't include it in the story, but I don't believe that the beaches, you know, originated in the last 5 years, and the mountains and all of these supposed things that people in California do instead of watching football. That conference has a rich history, going back to the great John McKay USC teams, or certainly more recently, the Pete Carroll USC teams. The Don James Washington teams in the early 90s were absolutely dominant and won a national championship. Oregon under Chip Kelly. And all of those, you know, what you're describing, that culture was no different then than it is now. Maybe there's a little more apathy right now because they haven't been as good, but it wasn't like you were seeing SEC-type support in the 1970s. So I think for a lot of people, that's an excuse. It's one thing to say that the fans don't care as much about it. That's maybe a contributing factor, but the real, you know, issue is what I just said, is that the presidents of the schools aren't taking it seriously enough and investing in it in a way that you need to compete with the SEC and the Big Ten and the other conferences.
And I don't know what happened, Stuart. King Alexander leaves LSU. He goes out to Oregon State, and he immediately dumps on the SEC and the culture. Of course, he's fired now because of what happened back in Baton Rouge. But it's like he made a transformation overnight. I don't know him very well. I mean, I've talked to him a few times, but I'd be curious to understand what he felt he must sound like to be accepted by the brilliant minds that sit in the ivory towers at Stanford and Cal Berkeley and elsewhere, because it almost seemed like he was trying to appease them by trashing where he used to work.
Well, so I don't know the specifics of that situation, but I'll give you another example of the almost fear of embracing football. Stanford is a private school, and so they don't have to disclose salaries, and they have never, ever, ever announced how much money David Shaw makes. It's a state secret. And I was told the reason is if the academic, the professors at that school, and it's a, you know, extremely distinguished school, knew the details of it, there would be a revolt, right? And at Stanford, let's be honest, if they were choosing between the football team or their Nobel Prize winning economist, they're going to pick the economist. And that's obviously the opposite of other parts of the country. And we could have a whole discussion about whether our priorities being out of whack, right, when it comes to football, but it is what it is. And in the SEC, when somebody gets an extension, that press release can't go out fast enough to brag that he's now the ex-highest paid coach in the country. That's the difference. That's the cultural difference right there.
You talk about a number of other aspects, and you mentioned television. I mean, there are good television packages, but, you know, they don't have the engine that the Big Ten, SEC, and ACC has, and that's that daily conference network that is seen by people. Do you think the inability of the Pac-12 network to ever get beyond a small reach has had a serious impact?
I do, because while the games that get on the Pac-12 network aren't necessarily their best games, those schools still need to recruit. And, I mean, I've heard many examples of, let's just say a Cal, right? They're recruiting a kid from North Carolina or Maryland or wherever, and they tune in and watch us this week. Well, I can't. I don't get the Pac-12 network. I don't know where to get the Pac-12 network. That's not an issue the other conferences that have conference networks have to deal with. That was a miscalculation by Larry Scott and by the rest of the conference in not partnering. You know, the SEC network that's ESPN. They get that on everybody's channels. Pac-12 couldn't do that on their own. Now, the funny thing is, now that we're 10 years later and the TV deal's coming up, it almost doesn't matter. The cable model is deteriorating. And, you know, as they look to that next TV deal, you know, for years people would say, oh, they need to sell it to ESPN. They need to get ESPN to distribute it. Nobody wants a linear cable channel in 2024. You know, the future is streaming. And so if there is one thing that is in their favor by this model that did not work, is that they do still own all the rights to all those games, and they can do whatever they want with them in this next contract. They could start their own streaming service. They could sell them to an ESPN or a Fox or a CBS to put on their streaming service. But, you know, chances are there's not going to be a traditional Pac-12 cable network come 2024.
And you talk about the LA schools and the recruits from Southern Cal, California, and Stuart, to me, that's maybe at the root of the problem, that there are so many Southern schools and Eastern and Midwestern schools that are living off of SoCal kids, and that didn't used to happen. I mean that's you can talk about reversing it, but in the current era of the college football playoff, those guys want to go where the playoff teams are. How do you undo that?
Yeah, and it's becoming a self-fulfilling cycle, right? The longer they go without making a playoff, the more that these kids that they need to be able to turn it back around are going to go to Ohio State. Now, I mean, Bryce Young grew up a UCLA fan. His parents both went to UCLA. He would have loved to play for UCLA. And then it got to be actually time to pick a college. And, well, I can't achieve what I want to achieve by staying at that school or in this conference. So, I mean, I think there's any number of creative approaches. I mean, at the end of the day, like, they need to win, right? We can say that any number of ways. But, you know, I do think there's a couple things that they haven't done enough of that could work in their favor. I mean, at the end of the day, like, the West Coast is a cool place to live. And those kids know that. And they need to play to their strengths, if you will, in terms of, you know, selling the reasons why it's better to stay out West. I do think that NIL will be a big, if they embrace it, can be a big help to them because the way most of these kids are going to make money through NIL is through their own social media and monetizing that. And all of those companies, TikTok, YouTube, you name it, Instagram, they're all in the West. The culture of those, you know, with influencers, like, they're all in LA. So USC, for example, has already entered into a partnership to create, you know, it all sounds completely foreign to college sports fans, but they're going to have a studio and the kids can go in there and create their own videos and graphics and help, you know, build their brand. And every school in the Pac-12 needs to be looking into something like that, because that's the future.
Stuart, speaking of the future, you mentioned the CFP. They're meeting this week, maybe as we speak. I know it's a hollow question, and do we expect anything out of them? But do we, and where are we on the road to expanding the playoff, which you point out in your article is critical to the future of the Pac-12?
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to come out of this week's meetings or this cycle that we're in right now, just because there's so much change among the commissioners. Jim Phillips just started at the ACC a couple months ago, and the Pac-12 is in between commissioners right now. Larry Scott is technically still the commissioner, but he's on his way out, and they haven't hired his replacement. But as I said in the story, once they do hire his replacement, that person would be nuts not to go, you know, move heaven and earth to get the commissioners to sign off on expanding the playoff, because so much of the Pac-12's crisis right now is just due to this not making the playoff and being the one left out. And the whole sport revolves around the playoff now, and you haven't had a reason to watch Pac-12 games down the stretch because they haven't been in contention. So the best thing that could happen to them is the thing that we all know is inevitable. It's going to expand. It's going to include automatic berths for conference champions, for Power Five conference champions. It's just, how soon will that happen? And to this point, there hasn't been any urgency to do it before this current contract's up. There's another 5 years left on this contract. I don't think Pac-12 can wait that long. So they need to be leading the charge to, hey, let's rip up the contracts and let's get it going as soon as we can.
Fantastic story. I encourage all of you to read Stuart's piece in The Athletic. Stuart, thank you. Come back. It's always fantastic to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Paul.
You got it. Stuart Mandel from The Athletic, one of the key and most influential people in journalism when it comes to college athletics. We are taking a break. A lot to do today. We have a lot of guests, including former great from LSU right around the corner, and your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, welcome back. Great to have you here. And Ron is up next. Ron, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul.
Hey there.
I'm doing good. Paul, I was wanting to follow up on the conversation
yes.
we had some weeks ago concerning you having a forum with the old radio announcers.
Right.
You had, at the beginning of the season, you and Eli talked, and y'all were talking history. And when we were young, as I was young once upon a time, radio is all we had. We had John Forney, and we had other radio announcers when we could pick them up on radio, and it was really important. If you could do the forum and bring back some of the guys that's still in the world, people will listen. Thank you, Paul.
Well, thank you. I don't know why I couldn't help but start humming when we were young, and your heart was an open book when you said when we were young. But the point being, you're right. We've had a few of them on, and the genesis of that conversation is a yet-to-be-announced documentary that I think is going to air this fall, but I'm not positive, about the old announcers. There's currently a crew working on that, and I can't wait. It's one of the most interesting subjects that I think the group has tackled. And you mentioned John Forney and so many other great ones that were the soundtrack of our youth and our adult life as well. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Ron. Let's talk again. Let's move along and talk to Pat, who is in Georgia. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much. I'll ask you about the Diamond Dogs in a minute. Stuart Mandel, he did an excellent job of talking about the unique peculiarities of the Pac-12, and I think until something's done about that, I don't think there's not a whole lot you can do to other than put a Band-Aid on it. I certainly hope that LSU does not hire the chief NCAA knucklehead on the rebound. I think they know better than that, and I have a whole lot more respect of LSU than that. But our son Kevin, he lives in Athens. He's following the Diamond Dogs, and I think we beat Clemson last night, and we're headed to Missouri for a weekend, and it's supposed to snow in Missouri, so I don't know whether they'll get those games in or not. Would you care to opine on Georgia's men's baseball team this year?
I certainly no expert. Right now in the SEC, if you're not in the top five, you have to. Well, if you're in the top five, that means you're probably in the top six or seven in the country. I can't say I have a strong opinion on Georgia. I think I've seen one or two of their games. Pat, do you watch baseball very often?
I do. And it, let me remind you, Paul. I listen more than I watch because of some vision issues that I have. But I understand we got a good crop of freshmen this year, and so maybe it's next year instead of.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be this year based on what I've seen. But you know, we've seen it at Tennessee, how a coach can turn around the culture, and you know, let's hope that is happening at Georgia. I mean, there seem to be some changing winds in baseball. You know, I know LSU fans are fit to be tied, and Florida may be coming back a little bit, but you know, the SEC is so difficult that I think it's almost it has to be fitful to try to judge yourself against the best of the SEC. It's like that. I was about to say it's similar to football, but it really isn't, because in football, I mean, you have three or four really good teams, but I don't think the top of the football, meaning the first quarter, are comparable to what you have in baseball right now.
Okay. Well, let's go back to Stewart. What was your take on Stewart?
I think he laid out some very intelligent moves for the Pac-12 to take, and I don't believe they'll take any of them for this reason. The Pac-12 is a different world, and I'm not about to sit here on this forum and belittle any educator who puts academics first, because that is the purpose, that is the mission of every university, including Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama. But you don't have to do it with such a haughty, elitist attitude, which is how they do it out there. And that was my point to make about F. King Alexander. He leaves LSU, where he appeared to take part in a major cover-up of enabling a coach who should have been fired. And he goes to Oregon State, and if you remember, when the Pac-12 and the Big Ten decided not to play football last August, F. King made some flippant comment about having your priorities in the right place. And those of us out here understand what is important. I mean, he just left LSU. Okay, where he took part in a backroom deal that may haunt the university for many, many years. And he's the least qualified. When you talk about Stanford and Cal Berkeley, and you understand all this, Pat, that is a hard thing to overcome. And you know, Stewart can sell the national parks, and he can try to sell the Grand Canyon and the Pacific Highway. But you know what? Bryce Young doesn't care. He wants to go where he's going to be successful in college, and then he can make millions of dollars. And when you start making the kind of money that NFL quarterbacks can make, you can have your home in Aspen and a little hideaway in Flagstaff or Utah, wherever you want. I mean, that's absurd. No young player is going to stay in the Pac-12. Because there are things to do out there. They've already done it.
Absolutely, Paul. And you touched on some of the peculiarities that I call them. And, you know, the Pac-12's just gotten to the point where they're not relevant anymore. And I agree with you. I don't know that there's anything that they can do to become relevant. It's going to be hard for Southern Cal and UCLA. I mean, I'm trying to think of the schools
Pat, the only way you can do it, and you have to take advantage of your opportunity, like UCLA. They hired Chip Kelly. So far, results have been bad. They take on LSU in the first game. Let's say they beat LSU. Suddenly, you've got something to wrap your arms around. But all I know is that Mike Leach left the great Northwest, where everyone says it's so fantastic, to move to Starkville, Mississippi. Figure that out on your own. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back. Terrence Marshall joining us in a couple of minutes. The LSU prospect expected to go very high. And let's check in with Kevin, who is in North Carolina. Hello, Kevin.
Yeah. Hey, Paul. Thanks for letting me visit.
Sure.
Glad to hear you hear that the primary reason for universities is to educate the masses there, number one and foremost. But anyway, a few takes the way I remember it. Larry Scott was hired, and he had of the Pac-12 now, and he had a heavy, heavy broadcast background, if you remember, in networks and TVs. And immediately, he convinced the Pac-10 presidents at the time to keep all the money, not go halfsies with ESPN or Fox. So they wanted to keep all the money. Then he made a big mistake, I think. Everybody made a big mistake with that first one. But the second was he divided up his network into five different regions, Arizona, Southern California, Northern California, Oregon, and Washington. And he had a very hard time, obviously, to this day, getting it on. The problem was there was no ESPN with all its leverage. Henceforth, ESPN is half owner of the SEC and the ACC network. And they got all those, obviously, Disney, other channels to leverage against any kind of carrier, cable company to, I'll give you this, but you got to take that kind of thing. But the mistake was also that he didn't do that. But then about two, 3 years ago, if you remember, ESPN was offering the Pac-12 at that time $850 million to bail them out, and still the Pac-10 to bail them out, take over the network, get it on all the cable and satellite dishes. And they still turned that down, the presidents did. But there was something that I think should have been more light thrown on by Stewart. When the Pac-12 made their big play for the six Big 12 schools, that would have been, if you remember, the Texas Tech, Texas, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Colorado, who they didn't include. And it's kind of hypocritical that they went after Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, not very good academic schools when they take that high road, you know, where academic Pac-12 guys. They didn't go after Baylor. Baylor at the time had a graduate that was the governor of Texas, Ann Richards, if you remember. Mm-hmm. Ann Richards said, oh, man, this isn't going to happen. I'm the governor. They didn't want Baylor because of his heavy religious background. The Pac-12 didn't want them, Pac-10 at the time. She put unbelievable pressure on the three state Texas schools to turn that offer down. That was part of why that deal blew up. Those six schools did not go to the 10 schools at the time, Pac-12. Ann Richards saved Baylor and blew up that deal in a backdoor kind of way, where she could cut funding to those three Texas public schools. And that needs to have more play in this whole thing. And then, obviously, the Pac-12 had to save face and took Colorado, which they wanted originally, which is a great academic school, and Utah to get the two Denver and Salt Lake City markets. So both of them took a hit. The Pac-12 and doesn't have a decent network on hardly anybody's cable system. And the Big 12, with only 37 million people in their footprint states, 25 million, of course, in Texas, they don't have a network. So it was a double-edged sword that hurt them both by that Baylor fiasco.
Well, Kevin, you're right. I have a reasonably good view of how these conference networks work. And I remember being hired more than a year out before the SEC network launched. And I was part of the group that went around and met with various cable companies. In fact, I did a commercial for, I think it was Dish, because that's the key. You have to get the big cable companies. There's four or five of them. You have to get the two satellites, which are Dish and Direct. And quite frankly, Larry Scott struck out in almost every department. That's why he's on his way out. We are taking a break here. Terrence Marshall joining us in a couple of minutes. Many more guests as we will look ahead to the draft later on. Your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. A lot to do today, and we have plenty of time. But the great wide receiver from Baton Rouge, Terrence Marshall Jr., joining us next.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.